Welcome to the Nerdcast from Project Nerd, all of you beautiful denizens of the internet. We are here again for episode 157.
Greetings, my friend. This is the brain of TV's Pinky in the Brain, and you are listening to the Nerdcast.
I am Tyler. We are joined again by our friends Adam and Bob and our fearless leader Iggy. How is everyone doing today?
Meh. I mean, it's early in the week still. But no, it's actually been an eventful week, eventful day. And to point out, we're all here, guys. All of us.
That's the most shocking thing, yeah. I mean, that's the biggest thing so far this week, for sure.
We all live a crazy life. We do. So Tyler rolling us in there, 157. You three gentlemen took over 156 there. Fantastic job covering E3. I was well informed editing the episode. With my new PlayStation 4, I got really excited for some of the games coming out. So a little bit more to talk about this week too regarding, but yeah, huge E3. And then of course the week before that, I believe it was the episode before that, we had Matt joining us from O Comic Con to spoil a little bit of Solo and Deadpool 2. So if you have got those two movies, check episode 155 out. If you haven't caught E3, check episode 156 out. But let's dive right into this week because there's a lot to talk about, guys. There's a lot to talk about, and even more so than Whole Foods, which has been mostly our entire conversation leading up to our recording here. So let's start, you know, we always jump in with the box office. Why don't we go straight there? So Bob, what do you got for us on numbers this past weekend?
Hey,
15 through 17.
I tell you, Incredibles just completely took the box office by storm. $182 million. That's the highest animated opening. And I think it was like, according to some of my stats, it was like the eighth largest of all time, just topped Captain America Civil War, which did $179.1 million. That's amazing. That's amazing. I mean, everybody was thinking it was going to be big, but they're thinking about the Finding Dory, the 140, 150 million, but 182 million is huge. That was followed in by number two with Ocean's 8 with about 19 million. It's running about 80 million total. Number three, Tag. I got a chance to see that. That was fun. And that did about 15 million. Number four is Solo. Made me lose my place. 10 million, and then Deadpool 8.6.
So you brought it up briefly, knocking again on Solo's numbers internationally.
You said, how can you not knock on them?
You said, I think, what, 5.6 internationally last weekend?
Just a little over 5 million internationally around the world.
But hey, it was still top five here domestically.
I know. It made more.
It made 10 million here. Yeah.
It made more in the United States than it did everywhere else.
It took 4 days for Incredibles 2 to catch and pass Solo.
I know.
That's impressive.
And Solo's been open since, what, the 25th? So Solo's
almost been open for
almost a month, and it took Incredibles 4 days to catch it and pass it.
So it was Father's Day weekend. The kids and I went to the wonderful Draft House Theater to check out Incredibles 2. I can see why it was 180 million there. I don't know how y'all's weather was this weekend. We had some questionable weather, so that might have helped, at least in this area, mostly on the West Coast with that tropical storm coming up and breaking up over Mexico, driving some people to theaters. But I really enjoyed it. 14 years later, I saw people posting about some people went to a later showing and there wasn't a single person, a minor, in the theater. It was all adults, young adults, ready to get their sequel finally. The theater I was at was full of kids. Tons of kids, and they were cracking up throughout it. Really liked it. Both my children enjoyed it thoroughly. I found it great. Jack-Jack, that whole part, that whole arc with Jack-Jack was fantastic. They've done a great job developing around that. But the dynamics of the family, it was fun. It was different, so it wasn't just like a rehash of the first one. And you got all the voice actors back. You got a lot of excitement. Really interesting. Really interesting. I was really pleased with it.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing. I mean, Brad Bird has only done, what, 3-4 movies? I know he did this, The Other Incredibles, and that Mission Impossible.
So
I'm surprised he's not doing any more.
Really cool. It didn't ever make it out, I don't think, but you know how the Draft House, instead of doing like commercials beforehand, they do kind of like a bunch of stuff related to the movie. They showed test footage of the Spirit animated movie he was going to do in the 80s that I don't think ever made it out there. So that was pretty cool to see. Will Eisner's this.
I think the one that people forget to see is Biggs one was he did the Iron Giant.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Iron
Giant. He also did Ratatouille. And what was the really bad George Clooney Disney movie? Tomorrowland. He did that one too.
I had forgotten completely about that movie.
Another one of the Disney busts.
They don't have many of them. I was looking actually earlier. Disney so far in 2018 has released exactly 5 movies. And all 5 of them are in the top 10 for the year, including one of their movies from 2017 with Last Jedi, which came out at the very end, obviously. But the top 10 domestic grosses for 2018, 6 of them are Disney movies. So I think they'll be okay.
Does that include Solo?
That does include Solo's the 5th highest grossing movie of the year. I mean, domestically, people want to shit on it, but it still is.
It's going to beat 200 million.
Yeah. So, really? I mean, now Black Panther and Infinity War are both about to pass 700 million for. So, I mean, you have Black Panther and Infinity War at number one and number two at 699 and 664, respectively. And then the drop is to Deadpool 2 at 295. But at the same time.
Wow.
So, but I mean, even like A Wrinkle in Time, which was a huge flop, made $100 million domestically, which is more than, you know, all but 9 movies that have come out in the U.S. this year.
Impressive. Impressive. Very much so. So Incredibles 2, like I said, was good. Bob, you mentioned you saw a Tag.
Yeah.
What we got there? Oh, Adam saw it as well?
Adam saw it, yeah.
Yeah, I saw it.
What did you think, Adam?
I really enjoyed it. I'll tell you what, the wife and I went to it. We were like, let's go see a movie. So we went and saw a movie. I wasn't sure what was going to be out. And we went and did it. And man, I'll tell you what, I laughed the whole time. Like it's legitimately a funny movie. Not just all the stuff in the trailers. There's a lot of stuff they didn't put in the trailers that just had me rolling. They did a really good job with the interplay between the characters. So John Hamm and Ed Helms, Jake Johnson, all those guys, just absolutely fantastic. I'm forgetting one name. Gosh, why can't I can never remember.
Jake Johnson?
I said Jake Johnson.
Ow.
Hannibal Buress.
Hannibal Buress. That's the one. Yeah. Thank you. Gosh. He did an absolutely fantastic job. Probably the funniest out of all of them, or at least got to say some of the funniest stuff out of all of them. I really liked it. I would definitely say if you just want a funny movie, it's got a little bit of heart in there because, you find out, I think everybody knows it's based on a crazy thing. So it's got a little bit of heart in there, but really, really enjoyed it.
Bobby on the same page with him?
It is a fun movie. Yeah, it does get a little serious during some parts, but overall it's very funny.
I don't think they hide the serious tone in the trailers. You kind of see that it's going to be some of them having to like grow up or their own lives are kind of there. So they kind of give you that direction in the trailer, but it does seem very funny in that I really want to see it. I wanted to check it out this week. Haven't gotten to it yet.
I was going to say, I could definitely see where Jeremy Renner broke both his arms during this movie.
He broke both of his arms during this?
He broke both of his arms during this movie, which is more than likely the reason why he wasn't in Infinity War.
I was about to say, maybe they had to write him out of Infinity War.
The action star who's been in a ton of action movies makes this movie with a bunch of comedic actors, and he's the one who breaks both of his arms. Now, he's got the most action-y stuff by far, but man, I don't think you could have gotten some good odds on that beforehand, would be my guess.
This is these things that I've just learned tonight has pushed me over the top to want to see it even more now. So intense movie, but yeah, good. I mean, 14.9 for a movie of that style, that's a respectable opening weekend, especially going up against The Incredibles.
So I mean, nothing made money this weekend other than Incredibles. So,
but 182 million is crazy. I know you guys talked a little bit last week and brought up that it was projected around 140. When I was looking at numbers, especially after the past few weekends, we've seen movies open less than what we thought they'd open at. 182 is huge. It was huge. And like I said, weather probably played a role in it, but that's a big, big opening.
What was the last kids movie? I mean, there are probably not a lot of, I'm sure kids went to Infinity War.
Would you count Wrinkle in Time? Because that was definitely targeted at kids.
No, because nobody went and saw it. So
it's so what's the last one everybody went and saw? We have, I mean, what was it? Coco, that was last fall. It was probably the last big animated one.
Well, Peter Rabbit also was this spring too.
Again, Coco, last fall, last animated one. We did purchase Peter Rabbit this week on 4K. And if anybody's interested, you can head over to blu-ray.com/forum and check out my sell thread. It's there. So it's not a very good movie, but yeah, we've had a couple kids releases that just, I think it's typical though, for those types of movies early in the year, they aren't the Pixar flagship titles or the Disney flagship titles and things. So they don't do the numbers that.
I mean, you haven't even had a DreamWorks one in there for a while. Like DreamWorks Animation makes some good movies that make a bunch of money. I'm just saying it's been a long time.
So they've announced How to Train Your Dragon. What are we at? Three?
Three.
Three. When is that, this year or is it next year? Like, cause I don't know if anything is on the slate this year for DreamWorks Animation.
I mean, there's a trailer out for it, so I'm assuming it's probably close. Granted, with those animated movies, you can get, a bunch of stuff out there. But I don't know. Release date is, nope, March of next year. So, wow. I don't know. When was the last time that DreamWorks?
We had last year, we had Despicable Me 3. So they did do one last summer. But they usually have gotten to a point where we've seen one, it feels like, every summer from them. Maybe they just ran out of Minions movies. I don't know. So
they're making a Minions 3 or 2, whatever.
Why? Why? I don't know.
They're little money makers.
All right. So speaking of sequels, big news late last week. So even before we recorded, we posted over at Project Nerd some big, big Wonder Woman sequel news. So we have had the rumors for a while, thanks to Twitter, thanks to some of the production team creators posting a Wonder Woman 1984, a lot of belief that it would take place in the 80s. We do get some, we talked about it, man, probably a couple months ago now with the Cheetah character being played by Kristen Wiig. But the biggest drop here was Steve Trevor showing up. So we get Chris Pine in Wonder Woman 1984. My first thoughts when I hear this before I see the photos are, okay, reasonable. She's flashing back. She's thinking of something with him. No, the photo is of him in the mall in the 80s in a definite 80s tracksuit. So he's here. What confuses me here is her reasons for a lot of things in Batman versus Superman and Justice League are based on what happened, especially around his death in World War I. And now all of a sudden, we're going to have not a sequel, not him showing up after these events, but him happening to show up in Wonder Woman's world before Batman versus Superman or Justice League. I don't know. I feel like that throws a wrench in kind of everything we've learned about Wonder Woman so far.
She never sees him. He just lurks. He's got that 80s tracksuit, like creeper vibe going. Like, I mean, it's just him in the background of shots, just staring weirdly at Diana. So that they don't have to worry about that, right? And I heard the rumor they're calling him, what, the Arctic Warrior, right? Something like that. So they've gotten that all taken care of.
I like it.
Best friend died a long time ago in a war, but he comes back, has a cool nickname. Yeah. He's got at least four metal toes as well.
I was going to say, as long as it's like a leg or an arm, that's some kind of special metal substance. I mean, DC Universe is notorious for, we can just go straight to Lazarus Pits. I mean, anybody that's existed in a Batman or Arrow comic has pretty much existed or has visited the Lazarus Pit. So it's not hard to believe that we could bring a character back. But Batman calls her out multiple times about her disappearing until Batman versus Superman because of the Steve Trevor stuff or because of the World War I stuff. And here he is. What, 20, or how old am I? 30-something years before we, you know, Justice League happens.
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't just lump in DC. Every comic book has brought back everyone from the dead at one point or another. But I'm sure there's an explanation for it. But at the same time, I'm 100% on board with, you know, DC movies going forward, you know, paying absolutely no lip service to anything that came before. That's fine. Like, yeah, fuck, just pretend like those movies, the Zack Snyder movies didn't happen. That's cool. Let's just do that.
It's not like storytelling is the strongest part of the movies they have put out already, like, to begin with. Like, they're, you know, they solved one of the major issues with two of the characters' moms being named the same thing, which everybody knew about for the history of ever, with the exception of the world's greatest detective, apparently didn't know that, one, doesn't know who Superman is, which is the weirdest thing in the history of the world, and two, doesn't know that his mom's named Martha. So, come on.
So what we're saying is Wonder Woman 1984 kicks off phase one of the DC Cinematic Universe. Wait, you mean phase two? No, phase one. Phase one.
Yeah, so. Story continuity in the DC movies is, I mean, I don't want to like dig into big old plot holes because Lord knows, you know, every movie, Marvel especially, has plenty of them to go with. But like him calling out, it took Lois Lane like two helicopter rides and like a jaunt to a glacier to be like, oh yeah, this kid from Kansas is Superman. But yeah. Batman had like years to figure it out and fucking cracked the code.
She didn't even have a whole movie. She had a montage. She had a montage to figure it out, for God's sakes.
At the same time, like, there's been absolutely nothing that's happened to Batman post Nolan that makes it seem like he has anything going for him other than, you know, money and a gravelly voice.
Well, that's the big thing, and we'll talk a little bit about Aquaman when we get to Hall H news, but it seems it's odd that we have Aquaman and the Batman, you know, happening here as well, and DC's just still flooding us with Wonder Woman news. Now, I mentioned this, and I also mentioned in my article before, we did finally get some Aquaman photos from Entertainment Weekly this past week, so you can check those out, of course, over at Entertainment Weekly, but it feels like DC is definitely riding on the Wonder Woman thing with Jenkins being attached as director again, and of course Gal Gadot back as the star. Makes complete sense. However, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens here with another prequel and it having these kind of twists and turns. And even more surprising, you know, they didn't even try to hide it from us. They just put it right out there. So it'll be fun to see. But yeah, so I brought up Aquaman, Hall H. 100% believe that we're finally going to get the Aquaman trailer, the movie that drops in 2018. Finally get it in San Diego Comic-Con, Hall H. But the bigger news out of Hall H is no Marvel Cinematic Universe, which I think we kind of knew because they're trying to keep everything under wraps for Captain Marvel in the next Avengers movie. They're not even releasing the new Avengers title till around the Captain Marvel movie because of fear of spoilers. But there's no Game of Thrones, no Walking Dead, no Westworld. A lot of big players sitting out. What do you guys think this does for Hall H this year?
I mean, they're still going to fill the room. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of things going on that people want to see, but almost all of them that aren't, like, MCU makes sense. Like, by the time San Diego Comic-Con comes around, they will have two MCU movies still in theaters with one, like, the other two, like, in various stages of post-production. Like, I don't know what they have that they could show that would be, I don't know. I understand. I guess it makes sense. Like, they don't have a holiday movie this year. They don't, like, we don't have anything until mid next year or so. Westworld totally makes sense because by the time it airs, they will have finished this season. And if season three is anything like season two, it's a long ways off. I doubt they've even started to think about starting filming. I don't know. Do people still watch The Walking Dead? I guess would be my question about that one not being there.
I don't think any of us do. Bob, are you still on it?
I've stopped watching it for a while. It's just gotten too depressing. Next year they're talking about, there's going to be so many changes with it, especially with talk of Andrew Jackson leaving the show.
Yeah, so you lose Rick Grimes, which comic centers around him too. And some bit of news that we were going to talk about today, since we're already rolled into it, you know, John Bernthal returning to the season, which he's long passed away. We assume it'll tie in somewhere into
flashbacks.
Grimes is leaving, I guess, or hate to say disappearance or death, because we don't really know what's going to happen, but is leaving. Yeah, so season 8 is about to be released, I think, August. They just announced it, of course, for Blu-ray and DVD. season 9 is greenlit. It's a thing, but it does feel like ratings have just dropped drastically over the past couple seasons.
Yeah, I mean, I think half the cast is pretty much leaving with this season. I mean, you got Rick is leaving. Oh gosh, I can't even remember her name. I think it's Lori Cohen is leaving this season. I mean, it's getting down to the point where they, from it's what it sounds like, is they've offered the lead to Daryl, basically, if they're going to reboot it all.
Everybody likes him anyway, so.
Yeah. So, yeah, it used to be fun. Now, like I said, it's just gotten really depressing. It's turned into a Who's Gonna Die This Week series. And it, like I said, it just got frustrating.
Yeah, so season 9 is here. Fear of the Walking Dead, is that still a thing? I feel like it is. Okay.
It is.
Do we know off the top of our heads? I mean, obviously, we could do some quick digging, but does anybody know off the top of our heads, is that faring much better in the rating side?
It's doing better than what it had been doing in the past. I mean, they've added Morgan to it. I mean, and the big thing that happened at the end of this season is they basically killed off their entire leads for the entire series, except for one character.
Spoilers, guys.
Yeah, spoilers.
But I don't know. Maybe if you wind down The Walking Dead and just more heavily promote Fear of the Walking Dead, or try to see what they can do with that, maybe that makes sense. We'll see. It feels like it's already ran its course, though.
Yeah. And
anybody we talk to, not just the group here, seems to be on that same page.
I've got some friends that are still watching it, but it's, yeah, I mean, it feels like one of those shows. It's hard to see it running for 15 years with the same cast and crew. You know, I don't know how many shows we'll see do that anymore. I know it's something that, you know, like Cheers got that far, MASH. I mean, there are a few shows that got that far, but it takes, like, especially a show like The Walking Dead, I imagine takes so much out of the actors with all the stuff they have to do, and it takes a ton to get all of the extras into the zombie gear and all that kind of stuff too. So it just, I'm with you, Iggy. It seems like it's run its course and they'll do a swan song next season and call it good.
So is the Bernthal play here, do we think that's a grab at ratings? He's definitely done nothing but grow in popularity since his role with The Walking Dead. And then of course, taking on the Punisher and the Marvel Netflix shows, they were not shy about saying, hey, he's coming back next year, like here's a teaser about it. So I don't know, maybe that's a ratings grab. You guys think?
I guess, I don't know, I feel like AMC has been uneven at best, but like I feel like at this point, like I'm really shocked that they haven't just cashed it in and called it a day and moved on. Like I don't know, I'm shocked that it has continued to go as long as it has. Like the ratings have to have been, I don't know. I guess I'm curious how, I mean, I don't know. What are the average ratings at this point compared to what they were?
We did not have those polled. So
I know, I mean, I know it peaked somewhere around like season 3 or 4, but I'm looking them up right now. The average viewers per episode is down from season 7 to season 8, down 4 million. It has not quite dropped below what was watching it back in 2010, but at the same time, that was a different era. But I mean, I guess on cable TV, still averaging 7.8 million viewers a year, an episode is not bad. I guess I'm more shocked that many people are still watching the show when they have other things on there, like, yeah, that's really depressing. I just looked it up. So I would say their best show probably right now that people would talk about would be Better Call Saul. And Better Call Saul averaged at best in its best season, 3.2 million viewers an episode. So even at its worst, Walking Dead is still doubling.
Well, no matter how good a spinoff is, it always feels like a spinoff. You rarely get that Frasier success, I guess is the way to put it. But where's Preacher at on the ratings there?
Oh, that's got to be.
If you got AMC numbers pulled up.
Season 1 averaging somewhere in the neighborhood of three and change per episode. Season two, definitely lower than that. The tail end of season two dropped way off compared to the beginning. Like season premiere was like 3.5 and the season finale was under 2.
Wow. Wow. So yeah, Walking Dead, I guess is.
So it's like the one thing that, like, I guess it's the one thing on their channel that people still watch. That's, I guess, impressive. All right. I take back everything I said. I guess there's still money to be made beating that dead horse.
Maybe we are the only four that aren't watching it. I don't know. So it's still impressive numbers there. But yeah, it seems in many ways, like if we're joking aside, a lot of people we talk to, even some people who still watch it, feel like it needs something. Like it needs to either wind down or it needs to change. So maybe this, you know, a big cast turnover is the big change it's looking for to keep it running. Not necessarily a ratings booster because it's still there, but to keep it going for another so many seasons. But be interesting for sure with that. I mentioned, all right, so switching over gears to gaming, mentioned last week you guys covered everything from E3, extreme details. I major kudos to Tyler while editing the episode. I didn't pull it up, but I feel like you guys managed to cover every single game that was discussed at E3. You made sure you covered it, and you called it out up front at the beginning of the episode. You said, we're going to dive in deep, and I feel like you guys covered everything. So there was a lot to be learned in last week's episode, especially if you didn't catch what was going on with E3. For my two cents, I was super excited. Obviously, did see the new Halo trailer. Was a little stoked for that. Showed it to my son. He was pretty stoked too. But something I know Adam got super excited for, and probably the gaming world in general really did, was the Last of Us sequel coming aboard. And online, you can find the Last of Us team sharing quite a bit of information about some of the new features that are going to be in the new game. So exploding arrows, you know, fighting competition with bows and stuff, but a lot more dodging and melees and jumping, going through tight spaces, things like that. So it seems like what they're really talking about is Naughty Dog's talking about enhancing the gameplay to change it up enough, which I think is a kind of a cool concept because you don't want to just do the same thing over again, you know?
Well, they had a lot of success. The first game is, I mean, just graphically stunning. And their storytelling is phenomenal. Like there are parts in that game where I was like, can I just get to a cutscene? Like, yeah, I want to kill some stuff, but I really want, like, I want to know what's happening right now. And I need another cutscene. Naughty Dog, what are you doing to me? Making me kill all this crap. And so I'm okay with getting a little more action, I guess, or a little more. Action's the wrong word because there's plenty of action in the first one, but a little more
gameplay features.
Yeah. More features, I guess. I feel like there's a better way to say that.
Make it a little bit more technically complicated. I don't, not complicated, but more.
Yeah. See, there's something there. I don't know what it is.
That's one thing.
Tyler, yes.
I love Naughty Dog stories, but like, and they did a lot with Last of Us that fixed a lot of things I had, you know, problems that were. When you play in those third-person games, sometimes like you can only make them so technically complex before they become unwieldy. Whereas, like, you know, no one would ever accuse any of the Uncharted games of being like a really good shooting game. It's just kind of like, and with both of those games, you found mechanics or you found like things that worked, and you just did them over and over again. And making that change, I think, is cool, especially for, because I think this is something about Last of Us that gets glossed over because it was an amazing single player like campaign game, but I used to be, but I'm not a huge like online multiplayer gamer with outside of certain genres. But the multiplayer for the original Last of Us was amazing. And me and some of my friends when I was in college played it so much, and getting a little bit more, adding a little complexity to some of the gameplay would make that, I assume they're going to do multiplayer again, considering how successful it was for the first one. But as good as that game was, its multiplayer was one of the few like console multiplayer games that I actually sunk a significant amount of time into. It was really fun. Partially just because it wasn't all fast twitch, first person, like COD style.
There's a little bit of strategy in there, a little bit of crafting, building, doing those things, but like, to make bombs and the stuff you do in the game, which I really enjoyed because it paralleled playing the game just in a multiplayer setting to me.
And playing the multiplayer for that always made me lament that the attempts at multiplayer in Assassin's Creed were as bad as they were, because I played that and I was like, oh man, Assassin's Creed multiplayer could be so much better.
Right. And it always just became who's the best person at free running to get away or to get the other person. Like, there's zero stealth and the game's
no strategy whatsoever.
Right. Zero strategy, just straight run as fast as you can and do as much crazy shit as you can to survive as long as you can or kill as many as you can. Yeah. I'm with you there, Tyler.
So you guys, you did kind of tease Microsoft a little bit, which I know you guys love to do, the Xbox, but they did announce over 50 games at E3. They announced 50 games. So I guess you guys didn't cover every game because that's a lot of games. But one, they closed. You think with Halo, Gears of War's news and all that, you could close with one of those, but they closed with Cyberpunk 2077, which you guys did talk about in detail. And it looks fantastic. But it feels like since then it has done nothing but pick up attention in Steam. I know so a few more screenshots released, more news around it and everything. So Cyberpunk 2077 looks awesome as well. Another interesting one that'll drop.
I'm shocked by all the stuff that's come out. I mean, I'm not shocked just because they've been working on this nonstop since like the last expansion for Witcher 3 came out. But like after E3 and at E3, they showed people like a full like gameplay, like actual gameplay for hours, and like how close the game is to being like ready to go. Like it seems very close to completion, which is super shocking. I do have some like complaints about Sony that we can get to in a second, but at the same time, of Microsoft's 50 games, the one thing, Microsoft spent a lot of money to debut trailers for non-exclusive titles at their press conference, which was a little bit strange, I think, just trying to get as many eyeballs on their press conference as they could. But how many exclusives do they have outside of Halo that they talked about?
When you have 50 games, you're going to have a good chunk of exclusives in there.
Well, but I mean, those are all their like Forza and games that Microsoft Studios makes or 343 makes or whatever.
Yeah, that's the question. Like, I need you as a Xbox fan to tell me one other game that was announced of those 50 that's not Halo that was an exclusive.
Oh, we just did for
Forza. No. I need you to do it, buddy.
Okay, Gears of War, things like that. No, I don't know that many, and they don't have that many exclusive because what is PlayStation still at 2-1, 3-1 numbers on Xbox One? It'd be stupid for most of those publishers to not take advantage of the system.
And Sony is now using that power for evil, as someone who doesn't play the Fortnites. But wow, the Fortnite players are real angry at Sony. And Sony's done this before with crossplay, but if you haven't been following it, the fact that if you've ever played Fortnite on your PS4, you are unable to move your Epic account to any other console ever. So when the Switch got announced, people lost their minds. They're like, oh, I play on my PS4 at home, but then I can play on my Switch on the go. You, in fact, cannot do that. You would have to make a brand new account and buy all the stuff again. And progress in Fortnite is super important on your Epic account. So, and Sony's like responses to it are the greatest, like, fuck you non-responses of all time. Like, they literally do not care. Like, we're winning. Fuck you. Like, you guys can take your ball and go home. We'll do what we want. And it's kind of terrible. Like, I'm surprised that the uproar hasn't been bigger than it has been. For, I get it, like, they're winning, and they have been winning now since the beginning of this generation, but their complete and utter disregard for any and everyone involved is pretty hilarious.
And short-sighted.
Yeah. I mean,
everybody's
you better hope you win about that
next generation, and
you better hope you win the next gen, because
yeah,
this shit's gonna come back to bite you.
When it needs to be painfully better. Like, if it's only a little bit better, people will buy the Xbox just to spite Sony for something like this. But if it's not just hands down the way better system, I think they're in trouble.
Well, we've talked about it briefly, and I think it's a big thing, and especially in the gaming world, know that they've talked about releasing other systems. There was even rumors that Xbox might even announce as early as next year there might be something, and Microsoft came out and squashed that. There's still a lot of money to be made in this generation of game systems. So Sony and Microsoft especially, and Nintendo's still pretty fresh to it in terms of their generation of systems is kind of in its own thing, you know, so it's really hard to compare them with the two, but there's still a lot to be done here. And it seems like each generation that's going to come out, I feel like the footprint of it over time is just going to last much longer because there's so much you can do with an existing system years later now that you couldn't do, you know, generations ago.
Right. And we're already in a half generation anyway with the PlayStation Pro and the Xbox One X.
Yeah.
X and S. Yeah. They've got, so, I mean, we already have those like half generational improvements. Like, oh yeah, here's 4K and here's the bigger hard drives and here's all the stuff you guys wanted for the original. And we see we needed to do that now. So we're already in that half generation. But I think you're right. I mean, I think you'll start getting announcements for next generation systems. I wouldn't be surprised to see them next year for 2 years down the line.
2020, 2021 area. Yeah. Sony did, since E3 has announced a new line of games, their greatest hits. So PS4 is going to drop a greatest hits. We've seen this pretty much on every other generation of system. But a lot new popular titles coming out at that $19.99 price point. So good for me, who just redove into the Sony market, you know, here at the PlayStation. A lot of those games I don't have. Somebody like you, Adam and Tyler, you guys are already sitting on that stack of games, probably.
I'll go through that list and sell you my copies for $20 if you want, buddy.
Yeah. Well, and I will say, like, I think this is definitely trying to hit people who, like you, have come back to Sony, because of the ones on the list that I've seen so far that I don't own, about half of them I ended up getting as PlayStation Plus exclusive games. So like Bloodborne, I got that for free years later. Same thing with Ratchet and Clank. Same thing with Infamous Second Son. Like most of these games I got for free on PlayStation Plus just because, which was kind of cool. Now granted, I paid over the course of many years significantly more than $20 for them by having PlayStation Plus, but you have to have it to play online. So
I mean,
but definitely pick up Bloodborne. That's really fun.
Right. The way I look at PlayStation Plus or Xbox's games with gold, like, I'm going to pay to play online with my friends anyway. If I get three games a year, that's essentially three really good games at $20. Like, so if I get three games a year that I'm happy with, I've essentially paid through $20 for three games. I'm super okay with that. And it's two games every month, so the likelihood of getting three a year is not too bad.
Yeah, I need to download those this month, but... All right, so I think we covered some on video games. Again, our episode 156, you can jump back a week to check out the full E3 coverage provided in deep, deep detail, courtesy of these three gentlemen right here. And I know, I think the best part of the episode is where Tyler goes, I think Bob just got up and left the room. Is that it? Because of the game you guys were talking in such detail about. But yeah, good extensive coverage there. Do cover kind of everything, even with the tease of Microsoft. Like I said, you guys did cover some of those Microsoft games, including Cyberpunk 2077, which seems like will be, even though it's for multiple systems, a huge hit on that one. So
you keep trying to make it sound like it's a Microsoft game.
I said it was for both. They dropped it at their conference. So anyways, we have still much to talk about, including Star Trek Discovery. I know I still haven't gotten around to it because you've had to subscribe to the CBS digital service. I don't know. Have any of you guys watched enough Star Trek Discovery to get a full opinion on it?
Nope.
No.
Now that Adam's shaking his head no either. Well, enough people have, because it has been renewed for 5 full seasons. So Star Trek Discovery will run through at least season 6. And a lot of talk about possible appearances from other characters from Star Trek series, including Captain Picard. So that would be interesting for sure, if we could see some kind of crossovers, maybe some, you know, they meet other ships, training, things of that nature. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
Listen, I think the big part of this, burying the lead, is there was a big deal made with Alex Kurtzman, one of the showrunners and producers, for multiple more Star Trek stuff, open the door for more stuff. But like, I don't understand post, you know, DS9, their infatuation with going backwards between Enterprise and this one. Like, we've done those ones already. Like, give me a post DS9 story, you know, give me some things in the future, which is exciting because there's talk now that they might be, there's currently like 5 different Star Trek stories, Star Trek series of various forms, miniseries, television shows in development now. And one of them may or may not be a sequel to The Next Generation, which I would get real pumped about.
Yeah, there we go.
Plus, they're apparently making an entire series around Khan, which, all right, sure, why not?
Nobody's going to complain about that. Most memorable lines.
I'm going to complain if it's not Ricardo Montalban.
Right.
Start complaining.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be in it, but just my two cents on there. Yeah, a lot of Star Trek stuff going on. So, of course, if you have had a chance to check it out, let us know if they're doing a good job right now with it. One thing I did, so I mentioned, as of course, I saw Incredibles 2 this weekend, and the animated short, obviously done more recently than The Incredibles 2, which has been worked on for many years, did not have John Lasseter's name in the credits. I was not expecting it to see it, honestly, in Incredibles 2, considering he was in the group of men that were pinpointed this winter with some certain behavior problems, we'll put it that way. So he was credited, obviously, because he was a part of the project, but Disney has finally, with the release of Incredibles 2, announced his replacements over there. What was interesting is Lasseter just, as Pixar grew, Lasseter's role with Disney just grew, and he kind of took over everything. So they've taken a step back in a little different direction and giving his position to two different people. Pete Docter, who has been involved since, I think, the original Toy Stories, really, has he's going to take over the Pixar side of things. And then Jennifer Lee, the person who helmed Frozen, is going to take over the Disney animated side. So dividing the role back into two parts might be interesting, because I feel like, for the most part, not to complain, the movies we're getting, Wreck-It Ralph 2 has been good, Frozen, Coco was Pixar, I'm sorry, but other movies that aren't Pixar have felt like Pixar movies since Lasseter's really stepped into the role over everything. I wouldn't mind seeing maybe a little bit more division again, and maybe even a couple, if not actually done traditionally animated, at least in the style of traditional animation on the Disney side.
Well, I mean, you compete with yourself less. Like, of all of, you know, Pixar and Disney Animation are essentially making the same types of movies, then you're in the same style, even, then you are, yeah, just working against yourself there. But if you have two varying styles, then they can complement each other. And, you know, again, like Tyler talked about earlier, it's not like Disney's losing any money in the end, but I see it as a variety. Variety is the spice of life. I'm going to go with that. That's where I'm ending.
And they are two different studios, but exactly right. When you look at Frozen and Moana are two different movies, and they're from the two different studios. But in a way, when you got the same animation style, you take the female lead approach without the romantic interest, things like that, you know, you're looking differently in two of the same movies. And it just takes me back to, which I felt was very underrated, but The Princess and the Frog. It was when Pixar was still releasing this new style of computer animation, and you got a classic looking, you know, 2D animation style with The Princess and the Frog, which I thought was beautiful, and was even, you know, another musical powerhouse, just like all the other Disney movies are. So you don't lose anything that is a selling point, I guess, for Disney. But as you said, you kind of get a little bit more variety there. I don't know. My two cents.
I think you also have to take into account is, until like Pixar became a full piece of Disney, and like, there was a long stretch of period of time there where Walt Disney did not make any good animated films that didn't have Pixar's name in it. Like, they made some stinkers.
You mean like Chicken Little and
Home on the Range?
Oh yeah. There was a bad period from that late 90s, because there was a great group of movies in the 90s that I think they're still praised for today, until more recently, that there was just a gap there of just,
yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was a dearth of good stuff there for a while, or everything was like a TV spinoff sequel to, like, let's make Cinderella 12 and Lion King 1.5 and Aladdin's 1-7. And then, I think, where did they finally, even like, I'm trying to think, and like, some of them aren't bad, but they're just not, I don't think, up to the same level of
quality wise. They were terrible.
Yeah.
First of all, they didn't go to Lion King 7. They switched to the halves. What was it? 1.5 or 2.5 that they did?
Bolt, yeah. Meet the Robinsons.
Meet the Robinsons was good, actually.
I liked it.
It had a good story, and it did successful at the box office.
Emperor's New Groove? Where do you
put that? Well, first of all, let's not knock on Emperor's New Groove.
Well, but Emperor's New Groove was also way back when they were still making Like that's like 18 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was like that late.
Emperor's New Groove was 2 years after Mulan and a year after Tarzan. Like that's still back when they were making pretty good movies. It's from basically around like 2002 until I would say probably 2009. There's probably about a 10-year span in there from like early 2000s to the 2010s where they didn't make much that wasn't. They didn't make many successful movies that weren't Pixar movies. But I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's not even necessarily an actual animation style too, which is something I spoke specifically on. But you bring up a good point here, the actual plot of it or the movies itself. I think you're putting just more minds up there at the top thinking of ideas or green lighting ideas as opposed to just one person, you know, in charge of it all. So it could, I think, keep that slate definitely diversive and is what we've started to see over the past couple of years. They've thought a lot outside the box out of the way. It felt like Disney, as good as Disney movies could be, there was always that formula for kids movies. And it felt like they've really strayed away from that. And I think this is a direction that can probably help them go even further.
But the only thing that we're seeing now with Pixar is we're starting to see that the sequel thing. It's like we've had three Cars. Next year we'll have our fourth Toy Story. Not that it's bad, but at the same time, you know, you get that argument of the nothing original. I mean, it's same characters in a different situation or a different story. I mean, it's.
But it also felt like Pixar is doing in many years, two a year, to where you'd get the sequel and the original one. Like, so what was the last year we got? Was the Cars 3 and Coco.
Right.
And Coco was wildly different than anything else we've seen from Pixar and was actually, like, I think one of their best ones they've done.
Yeah. And this year we're getting two sequels. We got Incredibles 2, and then we're getting Ralph Wrecks the Internet.
Which does look great, by the way, too. First of all, none of us are complaining about these two sequels this year, though.
No.
These are the sequels we wanted and we've demanded. And in fact, the opening of Incredibles 2 has a message from the cast and crew saying, thank you for your patience. It takes a long time to put something like this together. So it was exciting for sure. But moving on, sticking with movie news, we're kind of getting tight on time, so want to move on quickly. But Bob, you brought up something before we started recording that I found to be quite entertaining. Thought you might mention it regarding John Travolta's Gotti movie that just dropped here too.
Oh yeah. If you hadn't heard, John Travolta made a movie called Gotti, and it has got a goose egg on Rotten Tomatoes. Now apparently the studio is kind of turning the tables and they're going after the reviewers and calling them out on it. So I haven't seen some of the, I saw some of the comments, and yeah, they're getting a little testy. They're saying that the audience loved the movies. Why don't you guys love the movies? And, you know, it's that same old thing of, well, critics hate the movie, audience love it, or audience hate the movies, but critics like it. But I have a feeling the critics are probably right on this one.
Well, I haven't really heard of any audience really giving it a chance, so I don't know where these producers are finding this audience that they talk of.
Exactly, because it opened in a very limited number of theaters, and apparently the number of comments is almost the same as the number of comments for Incredibles. So yeah, I'm not sure where some of these comments came from that are for Gotti, but it's going to be interesting.
Well, IMDb lets you rate movies if you have an IMDb account.
Mm-hmm.
They also have they pull from Metacritic as opposed to Rotten Tomatoes. So they've got a Metacritic score and then an IMDb user score. So it could be anybody. I don't know if it's. I'm sure there are some reviewers who get in and do that as well. And its Metacritic score on the IMDb page is 25. Its user score is 5 out of 10. So 25 out of 100 for the Metacritic, which is a amalgam site like Rotten Tomatoes that pulls movie reviewers' scores. And then the users have given it a 5 out of 10. So I want to know where these users are or where these viewers are that have loved it, because there aren't very many of them according to IMDb.
Yeah, that's the best part about it, is after their like Twitter tirade calling out the critics, now people are coming out calling them out for like, your user ratings are suspiciously high. So you said it opened in, it didn't open in nearly as many theaters, made practically no money, but has almost as many user ratings on Rotten Tomatoes as like Incredibles 2 does. Like it had like 7,000 people, like more than 7,000 people have gone on and reviewed it on Rotten Tomatoes, and barely that many people have made reviews for Incredibles 2.
Impressive turnout rate in terms of people who went to see the movie and thought, hey, I need to go home and write my thoughts about this on Rotten Tomatoes. Very high percentage there.
So yeah, like right now the audience score for Incredibles 2 on Rotten Tomatoes is 88 based on 700,751 reviews. At the same time, Gotti has a 69% audience score with 7,034 audience reviews. I'm not saying that they falsified the audience score, but I'm saying, like, if I were to do some sort of like statistical analysis on there, this would be a statistical outlier, and it would warrant further investigation.
Oh yeah, especially when you consider Gotti opened in 503 theaters, and Incredibles 2 opened in 4,410.
Yeah, these
503 versus 4,410.
These numbers aren't looking favorable for the producer's honesty argument here, but. Again, we won't make any accusations, so we'll move on. Before we do go to closing thoughts, it is World Cup time. Cheers are out. Everybody's excited. I know Adam's thrilled. Adam, that first weekend, the whole first week, actually. Wow, what a week. What an opening to a crazy World Cup here.
Yeah, I was talking with my dad about it. I mean, obviously, we're a little late here. Happy Father's Day to everybody. Belated Father's Day. Spoke to my dad on Father's Day. We were talking about some soccer because we're both sports fans. I grew up playing soccer, so my dad got into it so he could talk to me about it. And I was talking to him. You know, I feel like we may be at a place where all of those big teams, you're talking about Argentina, Spain, Germany, Brazil. These are all teams that lost or tied their opening game, which is, for some of them, a shocker, and for others, a little more understandable. But you got a lot of those teams there where they either have older players, and, you know, this is professional sports, so we're talking people in their late 20s, early 30s, or really young players who are kind of unproven. So I know Germany's team, if you look at it right now, their average age is pretty reasonable, but that's because they've got a lot of guys who are in their 30s and a lot of guys who are in their early 20s, and that's, for a lot of these countries, not a huge problem, but it creates these weird World Cup periods where every now and again they perform under expectation because, you know, maybe they're learning and a little, you know, a step slower for some of their guys because of age and a step slower for other guys because of inexperience. So it'll be interesting to see what keeps going on here. I know Ronaldo showed out though.
I was going to say, so some big games for some stars, Ronaldo with the hat trick and becoming the highest scoring European ever at the international stage. Messi missing a penalty kick for his chance to win, and they pulled even for a draw with Iceland. Iceland's biggest international win or draw, biggest performance, I guess the way to put it ever. And of course, for me, I had Brazil and Germany, and I have money on this even. Brazil and Germany meeting as a rematch in the final from the last World Cup, with Brazil getting revenge. If things hold the way it is, Brazil and Germany will meet in the first game of the bracket of 16. So that's completely out the window there. So it is very interesting. We were at lunch today with some coworkers and explaining to them of why it's so trying to guess your groups and put them in the bracket, then do the bracket, is so hard because your ones and your twos from each group go on the opposite side of the brackets. So the matter of a difference of goal differential is what it could be. Could put that person on the other side of the bracket to eventually meet in the finals. So exactly how I had Brazil and Germany both as ones in their brackets and meeting on there. Or if Germany just finishes even with another team and has one less goal than them in their group, they could be in the two spot and have to open against Brazil. So not only for selfish reasons is that, but Germany doesn't want to open the field to 16 against Brazil. That's not idea for them. So if you are watching World Cup, definitely let us know what you think. Crazy first week. Some excitement for some of these little guys. We mentioned Iceland. Russia just blowing it off the lid with these goal differentials already, a +7 through two games, pretty much punched their ticket to the bracket. And of course, like we said, Mexico with the upset on Germany, Brazil only playing to a draw.
And, I would like to see someone who had the parlay with a Mexico win and a Swiss draw, because I think that ticket paid a little money.
Probably. But even more so, fun fact there, Mexico, the victory was celebrated so enthusiastically in Mexico City that it registered as an earthquake. So there is that. It is crazy. But I'm sure other countries are probably seeing similar results, as it's one of my favorite things about watching the World Cup is when they show the videos of like these town squares or these downtown, these groups of fans just together, just going nuts. And it's super exciting. But
I've seen some fun stuff online. I mean, interesting. I say fun, probably not the right word, about whether or not, as an American soccer fan, if it's okay to support Mexico as our North American CONCACAF brother, or say fuck Mexico because they're our biggest, you know, rival. I got to be honest with you. I am 100% on the Mexico bandwagon. Let's do this. Go North American brother.
Yeah. I'm down.
And look at Adam down here.
No, that
I'm
hurts.
I'm down too. I'm down. I'm saying let's do it. Man, Donovan came out. He came out and said with his Mexico scarf and his Mexico jersey on and was like, let's go Mexico. So you even got, you know, famed members of the USA team back when they could qualify saying, let's do it. So I agree, Tyler. Let's get this North America victory here.
I'm super excited. I don't like our chances because on the ranking of the 20 or so cities – based on, you know, our airport and our mass transit, but there is a slim chance that there could be a World Cup match, multiple World Cup matches in Kansas City in 8 years. It's not going to happen, but it'd be real dope if it did.
You guys can come visit me in Denver. Anyways.
Well, you brought up Donovan. He actually had my favorite thing from this weekend. So Cristiano Ronaldo scored his hat trick. Donovan tweeted him a congratulatory tweet, but included in there that now that he has finally passed Landon Donovan in World Cup goals, that he's probably – Donovan's graciously willing to admit that he's probably the better player.
Well done, Donovan. Well done. All right, so we are well over time, so we just got just a couple minutes to get some final thoughts in here. So, Bob, hit us with your best shot.
This weekend, next blockbuster is Jurassic World. I expect it to probably do about 180, 190 million.
You're projecting it that high. I don't know. Yep. So you think back-to-back weekends there. I guess, we are getting deeper into summer movie season. Okay.
Yeah. People love dinosaurs.
I'll bite. Chris Pratt, dinosaurs, big franchise sequel. I'll bite. I'll give you the 180. All right, Tyler, what you got for us?
I have gone back to a game I haven't played in quite some time. The new season of Diablo 3 just started. And I hadn't played in a long time, and it's real good. I forgot that this game is super fun and addictive, and I'm playing a demon hunter this season. I've already finished my first season set. I'm up to about Torment 7 or 8 right now, just cruising, and it's good.
What set do they give for the demon hunter this
season? This year, the first set is Marauder set, which is the all companions and then sentry damage. So, and I got the sentry quiver already, so I got 5 sentries, all companions, just wrecking.
All right, Adam, bring it on.
Watch some soccer, read some books. Good things there. If you have a PlayStation, and we talked video games a lot last week, PlayStation, Xbox One, you can get Fallout Shelter, which was a mobile game that released with Fallout 4 for free on those systems right now. So go download that. It actually is really fun on a big screen. So much more enjoyable than I thought it was going to be for what is essentially a mobile port to an actual gaming console. But a lot of fun. Laura and I both downloaded it on our systems and sat next to each other and played for like 5 hours after we got it downloaded. So if that tells you anything about its enjoyment level.
Based on what you share with us with Evergame, that really actually doesn't tell us anything, because it seems like every game you download, you're like, oops, look at those hours.
I play good video games. I don't know what to tell you.
Fair enough. All right, for you guys, I got it. It was Denver Comic Con last weekend, and we had some people say again, where are you guys? I know it's a slow year down here for us. We're not at a lot of shows, but in just a few short weeks, You can find the team in Omaha at O Comic Con July 13th through 15th. And that's right, it's a Friday the 13th to open up the convention. So excitement there for the horror fans. Some good guests. Obviously, head on over to ocomiccon.com. Find out what's going on. We'll be helping out, obviously, with the panels, the cosplay competition, and even actually running the whole cosplay area. But we have four panels already figured out. They've let us know what's going on. So we'll be hosting the cosplay Q&A. We'll be recording a podcast live on Friday. And then our popular do's and don'ts of podcasting with some of the other podcast teams there. And, of course, our Turning Your Fandom into a Business panels happening on Sunday. Not to mention, we'll be there sitting on stage with the celebrities, as we do best, soaking up in their, you know, basking in their glory, right? But anyways, that was a fun-filled, fully detailed, jam-packed episode of the Nerdcast, episode 157. Dare we say, an incredible episode, considering The Incredibles was out this week. I just like to do this stuff for Tyler. That's the only reason I do it. Anyways, we're out. We will catch you next week. Same nerd time, same nerd channel.